Hi, how you doing, George?
I'm doing
it's
fine.
An incredible honor to talk to you.
My name
is Robert from Lake Mary, Florida.
Sure.
And I've got a story that comes up from many, many, many years ago. I worked as an EMT here in Orlando, and Lake Mary's just north of Orlando.
Okay.
And one morning, it was a Friday morning, about 10 o'clock or so, I was very young. As a matter of fact, I was too young to drive the ambulance. So I was the attendant.
But at least
I'm the state of Florida's youngest EMT.
You must have been, yeah.
Anyways, make a long story short, we delivered a patient, a routine hospital transfer to a hospital east of Orlando. And while we're in there, one of these summer storms blew up. It was, like I said, about 10 o'clock in the morning, and one of these summer storms blew through, and I'm in the ER doing my paperwork. I hear the MedCom radio, which is what the ambulance, paramedic ambulance uses to talk to the ER, like, you know, if you remember the old emergency show.
Sure.
Yeah. It piped up, and once the med car, paramedic car, had a code in progress. It was basically witnessed. A gentleman about 300 pounds, black male, was cutting his grass. And happens that two doors down, the ambulance was on another call. It was a stub toe or something, you know, benign like that.
Yeah.
And, lightning struck a palm tree, came down a fence, and this gentleman was trying to, you know, finish cutting his yard.
Oh, no.
The storm blew in, and it came down the fence line, jumped on the mower, came up, and blew his, from the first knuckle of his right thumb, I believe it was right thumb, it's been like 1980 this happened, and, blew the tip of his thumb off and the tip of his big toe off and sent him into cardiac arrest.
Oh, my God.
But it was basically witnessed, okay?
Okay.
Because the ambulance paramedic unit was two doors down.
Yeah.
So they started the code, what we call CPR, a code. I'm sure you're aware of that. They started the code immediately and started the paramedic procedures and, you know, administering the drugs and stuff and everything and monitoring. And they worked it all the way into the hospital. Well, I'm in there doing my paperwork, and the ER personnel asked us, since we're, you know, basic life support, if we can stay around and help them work this code. So we called dispatch, and they said, sure, no problem. We've got extra units on and everything. And so we were freed up for the rest of the code in the ER there. Well, after about an hour and 30 minutes, we finally got him stabilized enough to where he could breathe and beat on his own. So me and my partner left. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, that was, like I said, about, you know, 11:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And we leave, and about 4:30 in the afternoon, we're just about ready to get off of work. And our dispatch calls us on the radio and says, hey, guys, remember that situation this morning at such-and-such hospital? Yeah. Well, that gentleman's conscious, and he's in CCU, the cardiac care unit of that hospital. Well, thank you very much for telling us, you know. So we didn't think a whole lot of it other than you don't run across it too often. Well, we got off work, and my partner and I looked at each other. This was Friday afternoon. And we looked at each other and said, hey, you know, I'd like to go down there and say hi to him.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, me too. So away we went. George, this is going to raise golf balls up on me. It does every time I tell a story. We walked into CCU. And at the end of the hallway, you know how they have, you know, a circle, and there's beds in each little cubicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was right in eyesight of us, and he was talking to a couple of family members, and he looked over at us, and he looked, pointed at me, and he says, you're Robert, and he pointed to my partner, and he says, you're Jeff. Now, George, I don't know how much experience in hospitals you have, but when we're doing CPR on you, you're not aware of anybody talking.
No. Now, okay? unless somebody gave him your names.
Nobody knew we were coming up.
That's amazing.
We were still in uniform, though.
Right.
But it gets better than that. At that point, I guess he hadn't had time to think about the consequences or any implications,
sure,
you know, anything like that. But he goes on to tell the story about how he is on the ceiling, like laying on the ceiling like reverse gravity. Like if you flip the belt enough, somebody says he's laying up against the ceiling looking down at what we're doing to him. And we're, like, awestruck still from him calling our names. Well, there's a procedure where if a physician calls for a subclavian tray to do a subclavian, run a subclavian line, which is just under your clavicle, your collarbone, it's a surgical procedure. And what they do is they pull this blue wrapped kit, the sterile kit, out of the cabinet, okay, in the ER there,
all right,
which is behind this gentleman's head. And the nurse who was pulling it down, it had to reach up, it was above cabinet. She grabbed it, and as she's pulling it, she didn't realize that there was another one half laying on top of it that she couldn't see. That second one fell out, hit the cabinet, the countertop, and continued on and hit the floor. That man described that some lady in white dropped a blue thing on the floor. And that's been 1980, George, and it still gives me golf balls.
He had the classic out-of-body experience.
It was, and I have another one I can't tell you right now because it's taking a lot longer to tell you.
I understand.
I started to tell your screener, and I would like to call back and do that sometime, but it was the most amazing. It's even more amazing than that story.
All right, well, you keep listening to our open lines. Can you imagine, though? A ball of lightning hitting a fence, blowing off your toe and your thumb, and then it puts you into cardiac arrest.